You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about sexual fantasies. This is actually one of my favorite topics of all time, and I love to return to it again and again because I feel like it has, well, there's just so much rich material in our fantasies. And being in touch with our fantasies, I think, is really important to our sexuality. My guest today is Dr. Justin Lehmiller, who is a social psychologist and a research fellow at the Kinsey Institute. He's the author of the blog Sex and Psychology and the popular book Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Dr. Lehmiller is an award-winning educator, having been honored 3 times with the Certificate of Teaching Excellence from Harvard University, where he taught for several years. He's also a prolific researcher who's published more than 50 academic works, including a textbook titled The Psychology of Human Sexuality that's used in college classrooms around the world. Dr. Lehmiller is a much sought-after voice in the media on sexuality research and education. He's been interviewed by The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and CNN, and he's appeared on dozens of international radio, podcast, and television programs. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Justin.
Hi, Tristan. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I like to start off with a question that is slightly related to something about you. So my question is, your book is called Tell Me What You Want. Can you tell me what you want to have for dinner tonight?
For dinner tonight. So my ideal go-to would usually be Indian food. That's really my favorite because I love spicy and I love just all the different flavors, and I actually make a lot of Indian food myself. It's something I've been experimenting and exploring a lot with during the lockdown and quarantine period. So that would definitely be the ideal for tonight.
Okay. Okay, good. So you've conducted the largest study of Americans' sexual fantasies, which is what your book is based on. One thing that surprised me about this book, about your results, was that you say more than 3/4 of the men and women you surveyed hope to eventually act on their favorite sexual fantasies. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, because, you know, there's been a lot that's been said and written about sexual fantasies in the psychological literature. And I know a lot of colleagues and a lot of sex therapists who, when they talk about fantasies, tend to think about them as just this mental thought you have that turns you on, but it doesn't really have any bearing over what you actually want to do in your sex life. And so it was surprising to me to find that for the vast majority of people, they said their favorite fantasy was a desire. It's something that they do want to act on. And there's really been surprisingly little research that's looked at that sort of connection between fantasy and reality and how many people have ever shared and acted on their fantasies. And so that was something I really wanted to explore in this work is, for how many people is their favorite fantasy a desire, and how many have actually gone the next step of telling their partner about it and maybe acting on it?
Yeah, I mean, I loved that piece of information because I do think of people having fantasies that are sometimes, you know, first of all, sometimes would be very hard to coordinate. You know, like people don't have regular access necessarily to orgies or to having sex with seven people, or to having, you know, sex with aliens on other planets. And so I tend to think of, and I think a lot of people, to me, have fantasies and they don't ever consider wanting to make them come true. So I loved that like nugget of information, because I also feel like it just tells us a lot about desire, right? That these are desires as well. They're not just fantasies.
For a lot of people, they are. Now, when we say that most people's favorite fantasy is a desire, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of the other hundreds or maybe thousands of things that they fantasize about in their lives are things that they actually want to do. Sometimes a fantasy is just a fleeting thought. It might turn you on in that moment, but you have no desire to ever act on it. And maybe you never fantasize about it again. But for that go-to fantasy, the thing that people think about regularly when they're masturbating or having sex, like that for most people does seem to be a desire. But for the people who don't want to act on their favorite fantasies, I find that for some of them, the nature of their fantasy is a little bit different, right? So if it's a fantasy about something that would just be totally impossible to ever act out, you know, because maybe it involves the aliens that you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Or if their fantasy is something that it turns them on, but they know it would be really risky to do it, where they're afraid that they could get hurt or somebody else could get hurt or something along those lines. I find that, you know, a lot of people with those fantasies don't want to act on them. And one example would be, you know, I find that forced sex fantasies or the consensual non-consent fantasies are very popular across persons of all gender identities and sexual orientations. But a lot of people, when they talked about that as their favorite fantasy, went to great lengths to say, you know, this is something that turns me on, but I would never act on it because I know in the fantasy, I'm in complete control of it. Mm-hmm. But if I were to act on it, I'm giving up that control to someone else and I'm afraid of what might happen.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So you break up the fantasies into seven broad categories. I want to go through a few of them. Coming in at the top of the list for Americans is multi-partner sex. Okay, so tell me some of the examples of this.
Sure. So when I was coming up with those themes, just to step back for one second, I looked at people's favorite fantasy of all time, and I had people write out these narratives. They could say as much or as little as they wanted, and then I asked them to sum up the primary theme of their fantasy in a single word that encapsulates it. And then I did this content analysis, and that's where I extracted the seven themes. And multi-partner sex was by far the most common. And in fact, the single word that was used more than any other word in describing people's favorite fantasies was threesome. Mm-hmm. About a third of people said that was their favorite fantasy of all time. But when I separately asked, have you ever fantasized about having a threesome? It was, you know, 90% or so of people across gender identity, sexual orientations who had fantasized about that. But the multi-partner fantasies can take a couple of different forms. For example, some people talked about orgies and other larger group settings. Also, some people specifically mentioned gangbang type scenarios. So there's lots of different ways that these fantasies can play out, but threesome by far the most popular.
Well, what's fascinating about this is that it comes in at number one, but then at number five in your list is partner sharing and non-monogamous relationships. So people specifically fantasizing about their partner having sex and even a relationship with someone else. Mm-hmm. So because these two are on the list, I mean, it begs the question, why are so many people monogamous if we're all fantasizing about having sex with other people?
And it's a great question. And I made it a point to distinguish between the multi-partner fantasies and the non-monogamy fantasies, because they seem to be really about two different things. Where the multi-partner fantasies are fantasies about a specific act where you've got more than two people involved in it. But the non-monogamy fantasies are not necessarily about multiple people engaged sexually at the same time. It's about having that opportunity to have more than one relationship partner or to be in some type of open relationship. So it seems that, you know, most people have fantasized about this before. They're aroused by the idea of it. And I think a big part of the reason that there are so many fantasies about it is because human beings are just inherently turned on by sexual novelty and newness. And it's hard to keep things fresh and exciting and interesting in a long-term monogamous relationship. This is something that researchers refer to as the Coolidge effect, right? Basically, the idea behind it is that we tend to experience this habituation of arousal or this decrease in arousal the longer we're exposed to the same sexual stimulus. So for example, in studies where people watch the same porn clip every day for a week, they show less arousal with each subsequent viewing. And so the way that we can reinvigorate or reawaken arousal is by adding something new and different. And I think by having the opportunity for new partners or multi-partner sex, that really taps into and feeds that need for novelty that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But this, Justin, this also makes me think of the Christopher Ryan book, Sex at Dawn, where he really argues that we are meant to live in community and in groups of people, and we're not meant to be monogamous. I mean, that's another thing that really strikes me about this, is that people don't just want novelty, they want other people.
Sure. And I think there are lots of different ways to look at this. And I think novelty is certainly one aspect of it. But another part is just that it's really hard to have one partner who can meet any and all needs you have, sexually, emotionally, and otherwise. And we have so much expectations from our partners, especially these days. And, you know, having that opportunity to have multiple partners, to have different people who meet different needs, I think is part of the appeal as well. But certainly, I think, you know, what you talk about with regard to Chris Ryan's book, I'm very familiar with it. In fact, I had Chris Ryan come in and do a guest lecture for my students on his book when I was teaching at Harvard. I had all my students read Sex at Dawn and critically analyze it. And so I think his arguments are certainly another perspective, another lens at looking through this. So we can think about, you know, all of these fantasies are very complex and multi-determined. And I like to describe them as being biopsychosocial in nature, meaning you have evolutionary and biological factors that come together with our own individual psychology, our personalities and learning histories, as well as the culture and society that we're embedded in. And together, these things produce what it is that turns us on, what we're aroused by, and what we want when it comes to sex and relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Coming in number two, anyone who's kinky like me, not surprised by this, power, control, and rough sex. So people are fantasizing about BDSM a lot. Do you feel like your study compared to others in the past, like, sees a notable increase in that? Are people kinkier than they were according to research 20 years ago?
Well, that's a great question. And something that we don't know for sure is the extent to which people's fantasies are shifting and evolving and changing. And that's because there have never really been any long-term longitudinal studies on sexual fantasies. Mm. So, and big reason for that is because there's just no funding to do this kind of work. So for the study that I did, where I surveyed more than 4,000 people, I had no funding behind that. It took me 2 years to collect my data in this really extensive sample. So you can imagine if you're trying to do a long-term longitudinal study of fantasies, that it's just really hard to do that in the absence of funding for that kind of work. So I do believe that our fantasies shift and change and evolve over time. And as some evidence of that, at the Kinsey Institute, we're actually in the midst of a study looking at how this pandemic and lockdowns and social distancing are affecting our intimate lives. And mm-hmm. as part of that, we asked the people about their sexual fantasies. And I found that about 1 in 5 of our participants reported noticing a change of some type in their fantasies during this pandemic. And those changes took different forms, but for a lot of people, they were fantasizing about new and different things that they'd never fantasized about before. And also the frequency with which people had certain types of fantasies seemed to change as well. So our fantasies do seem to be responsive to what's going on around us to some degree. And we know that BDSM has become more embedded in our culture and media depictions and so forth. So it is possible that maybe we're a little kinkier than we were, but those kinky interests are not new. And when we look throughout history, we see that they've kind of always been there. So it might just be that they're coming to light a little bit more these days.
But that's fascinating. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating, and we can't know everything right now, but how this lockdown has affected so many different aspects of our life, but how it has affected our sexuality. That piece of information is really startling, right? That this is actually, it's changing the way we think about a lot of things, and that's also spilling over into fantasies. And also, in some cases, all we have are fantasies. For folks who are living alone, for folks who are quarantined alone, for folks who don't want to be dating right now because of the risks of COVID-19, fantasies have maybe become a bigger part of their sexuality, right? Because they're not having in-person contact with people. And to see where that's going to go, you know, for us to be able to look back on this is going to be just really great information, I think.
Yeah. And what we see in our data is that on average, people say they're fantasizing more now than they were before the pandemic happened, which mm-hmm. I think speaks to how a lot of us are turning inward to meet our sexual needs right now because we can't go out and interact with the world around us in the way that we used to. And we know that our fantasies serve a lot of different purposes in our lives, that they're a way that we can relax and de-stress. They're a way that we can promote and maintain sexual arousal and excitement. They're also a way that we can meet deeper emotional needs. And so, you know, this is a very complex, very challenging situation. And I think it makes sense that fantasies are playing a more central role in our lives right now than they were beforehand.
Okay, number three on your list of most popular is a category you call novelty, adventure, and variety, which really kind of explains almost all of these, right? All of these are really about novelty and adventure and variety. But tell me, like, specifically what falls under this.
Sure. So yes, to a degree, a lot of our fantasies, regardless of the theme, are just about trying something new and different. But in this particular category, I'm talking more about thrill-seeking sorts of behaviors where people are mixing it up and just trying something that is new and different and a little bit adventuresome for them. So for example, one of the most common fantasies in this category was having sex in a new location. So taking it out of bed and just doing it somewhere else, whether it's in the shower or in a semi-public place where there's that risk of being caught. In fact, public sex fantasies were the biggest fantasy in this particular category. A lot of people seem to be really aroused by that idea of having sex in an environment where there's that risk of being caught. They don't actually want to be caught. They don't mm-hmm. want to be observed. They just want to know that there's the potential that they could be caught.
Which is different than having, you know, public sex in a space meant for public sex, right? At a play party, at a sex party, at a swinger club. There is a distinction there, right? For people who want to be in spaces where the voyeurism is 100% consensual and there's no way that anyone's going to sort of stop them or catch them or arrest them, versus people who would like to do it in a public or semi-public space where they're not supposed to, I guess.
Yeah, and that exhibitionistic element is something that is different, and people were less likely to report fantasies about being watched by other people. And I think a big part of the reason for that is because a lot of people feel pretty anxious about sex, and the idea of somebody watching you might create a lot of performance pressure or anxiety. And so, you know, I think that's part of where that thrill of potentially being caught is a turn on to a lot of people, but a lot of people have concerns or insecurities about actually being watched by others while they're in the act.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to take our first break. This is all just so much food for thought. we're gonna hear from our great sponsors, including Calm, which is a great app that I literally use daily to calm myself the fuck down. No, for mindfulness, for meditation, for better sleep. It really does help me a lot. So let's listen to our commercials. And when we come back, more with Dr. Justin Lehmiller. Hey everyone, I don't know about you, but my sleep schedule has been really off for the past 6 months. And I've heard that from a lot of other people. A good night's sleep goes a long way for me, but I admit I have to get some assistance. I use Calm, the app designed to help you ease stress and get the best sleep of your life. Calm has a whole library of programs designed for healthy sleep, like soundscapes, guided meditations, and over 100 sleep stories narrated by soothing voices like Stephen Fry, Kelly Rowland, Laura Dern, even Harry Styles. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's hundreds of hours of programming, Calm's entire library, and new content added every week. Get started today at calm.com/Tristan for 40% off a premium subscription. That's calm.com/Tristan. Over 85 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds and get better sleep. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today about sexual fantasies with a pretty knowledgeable person who's done a wide-ranging study, one of the biggest or the biggest of Americans' sexual fantasies. You can read more about that in his book, Tell Me What You Want: The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. He's Dr. Justin Lehmiller. So, Justin, before the break, we were talking about novelty and adventure and variety. The fourth category that is the most popular from your survey is probably the one that is a cornerstone of my own career as an educator, which is taboo and forbidden sex. In fact, in your analysis of all the favorite fantasies of all time, taboo activities emerged more often than did fantasies of love and romance, which I think is amazing and fascinating, but also makes a lot of sense in a sexual culture that still has a lot of puritanical values and hangups. Because I think what is naughty is sexy.
Yeah, and it is to a heck of a lot of people. And that was a little bit surprising to me just how widespread the taboo fantasies were. And there is something to be said about when you're told that you can't do something or that you shouldn't do something when it comes to sex. That seems to increase people's attraction to it or their interest in wanting to explore it. I think we can explain this through the psychological lens of something called reactance, which is basically when you have this restriction placed on your own freedoms or autonomy or your ability to make your own decisions. People tend to rebel by that, by reasserting their independence. And so I think that's part of the appeal, part of why we tend to eroticize the taboo, is that it's we're being told we can't do something and we're rebelling against that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I've always said, you know, I want anal sex to, you know, be not as taboo as it is, in that I want people to be able to explore it and have less guilt and anxiety and shame about it. But also it would like put me out of business. And I think it's been an interesting shift for me just to see, like, when my book first came out and to see the discussions now of anal sex is like sort of casually dropped in as a sex tip in like Cosmo, when, you know, back in the late 90s, that was certainly not the case. So things have kind of evolved, but I feel like then our fantasies can evolve. I also think, you know, they're like, people want a little danger with their sex. I think those things are closely related, you know, adrenaline and endorphins. And so I think people like a little danger. And some of that comes with exploring these forbidden areas. You know, I'm also thinking too about this explosion in the past decade of what they're calling familial relation porn, which is a kind of a faux incest porn, right? Like, my stepfather is hot, or, you know, I fucked my stepmother, you know, that kind of thing. That's really become at the top of the list of porn genres, when it's been there, but it hasn't been as popular as it is now.
Yeah, and that was certainly one of the fantasies that fell into the taboo category. I asked people about those incest types of fantasies, and I found that about 1 in 5 people said that they'd fantasized about some version of that before. But when you look at the number of people who say they fantasize about it often, it's pretty low. It's only about 3% or so who say that this is their biggest or favorite fantasy. So a lot of people have been turned on by it, but far fewer that say, you know, it's actually something they want to do in their real life. And I think, you know, in the case of taboo fantasies, there's a little bit more of a distinction between the fantasy and the desire, because a lot of the taboo fantasies might be things that could potentially be dangerous. such as, you know, voyeurism fantasies where you're spying on somebody else who is undressing or having sex. You know, that by definition is a non-consensual act. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for a lot of those fantasies in this category, people made more of a distinction between the fantasy and the desire.
And of course, there's so much overlap, right? Because BDSM can be seen as taboo or sure. forbidden. Multi-partner sex could be seen as taboo. I think it's clear in the book that these are fluid categories, right?
Yes. And they can be combined in any number of ways.
Yes.
And in fact, I did a follow-up study and some of the results from that were just published in the Archives of Sexual Behavior. And in the follow-up study, I did something a little different where I asked people to describe their favorite fantasy of all time. And then I gave them these seven themes that we've been talking about and asked them to check all that applied for their favorite fantasy. And what I find is that most people are combining different elements of these fantasies. And in fact, you could combine all seven of them if you wanted. But one of the really interesting things about the follow-up study was that I found that these seven themes accounted for between 96 and 97% of people's favorite fantasies in that study, which says there really is something to this seven broad category structure.
Yeah, yeah. So some of your findings are depressing to me. Are things I knew, but I didn't want to know. I think some of the most depressing to me was around bodies, around, you know, you have this chapter on like who we fantasize about, right? And there was a lot of stuff around the bodies of the people we fantasize about, as well as wanting to change our own bodies. And by that, I don't mean like change our bodies gender-wise, because that is in one category. But I mean, especially for women, there was a lot of, I want to have a different body, or I want to have my genitals look a different way. And this just bums me out.
Yeah. And so I thought this was one of the more interesting things I looked at, was how do we psychologically represent ourselves in our fantasies? And then what does that say about how we feel about ourselves? What does it say about our culture or society? And I find that the people who have the most pressure placed on them to look a certain way are the ones most likely to change themselves in their fantasies. And I see that men and women change themselves in pretty different ways, where women are much more likely to want to change their bodies, men to want to change their genitals. And I think that fits with the different cultural pressures on women to look a certain way, men to have large penises and so forth. And I find that gay and bisexual men are actually much more likely than heterosexually identified men to change themselves in their fantasies, because I think in the gay and bisexual community, all of those pressures on men to look a certain way are very amplified. Yeah. And so the gay men and bisexual men were fantasizing about changing their bodies at the same rate that women of all orientations were, just because I think there is so much more pressure to have the ideal body for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then this raises the kind of chicken and egg question, which is, do we shape our fantasies, or do our fantasies shape us?
It's a great question. And again, we need the longitudinal research to know, but I think it probably goes both ways, where our fantasies to some degree are a product or a reflection of our psychological health and well-being, of our personalities and so forth. I find that there's so many connections between our fantasies and who we are. And so they do say something about us. But when we're repeatedly having these fantasies and all of these changes that we're seeing, that could potentially reinforce some of these other feelings that people have about themselves.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And also, again, like, I mean, I feel like there is a relationship with porn here. Because porn sometimes gives us ideas and images and a kind of language to describe what turns us on. Because sometimes we can't pull that out of thin air, right? But we see it and we're like, oh, okay, that really turned me on, or that didn't turn me on at all. So I want to remind our listeners that you can always call me with questions. Our number, 24 hours a day, whenever you want, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I've culled together some questions from our listeners that are specifically have to do with fantasies. So I thought I might throw them your way. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay. This one comes from Anne, She writes, I feel bad about my fantasies. I'm a straight woman and I have a lot of rape and forced sex fantasies and they bother me. I am for equal pay, respect, and fighting the patriarchy. So my fantasies also kind of offend me. People in my circle of friends are always saying, make your fantasies come true. And I'm not sure I want that, except that it really does turn me on. I'm feeling conflicted.
You know, those feelings are not unique to the caller. I find that there's a lot of shame and guilt surrounding a lot of different types of fantasies. And one of the things I saw in my work was that the rarer people thought their fantasy was, no matter what it was that they were fantasizing about, the more guilty, shamed, anxious, and embarrassed they felt about it. And so I think part of it is just feeling like our fantasies are abnormal or weird, that then makes us feel bad about them. But when it comes to the forced sex fantasies or rape fantasies, as they're sometimes called, I do find that a lot of people feel guilt about those in particular, especially in this Me Too era, where people want to be these strong and vocal supporters of victims and survivors of sexual assault and abuse. But by the same time, they're turned on by this idea of forced sex. And so they're trying to psychologically reconcile those things. And I think one helpful thing to try to use in coming to terms with this is to first recognize that forced sex fantasies are extraordinarily common. The majority of men, women, and non-binary persons in my survey had fantasized about this before. But these fantasies bear no resemblance to a real-world sexual assault, because in the fantasy, the fantasizer is in control, and they're the ones with the power, and they dictate the terms and everything under which this takes place. So it's very different from the reality of sexual assault, where somebody is disempowered and victimized. And so for that reason, I think it's important to take that rape fantasy term out of this equation, because these fantasies are not about rape. They're not about sexual assault. And that's where I like the term consensual non-consent, because in the fantasy, it happens on your own terms and it's completely consensual.
Right. The consent is the important piece.
Yeah.
And I think it makes sense also that in a culture with so much sexual violence, that would be one of the areas where we would want to sort of like roll around with, where we would want to maybe write our own scripts, where we could wrestle with issues that folks may feel every day when they leave the house, right? That there's a threat of violence. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes sense based on a cultural context that people have these fantasies. I definitely do.
Yeah, and that could be part of the explanation here. Another part could also be the taboo element of it. Mm-hmm, and then also just more broadly, the power exchange element. Power exchange is such a prevalent theme in our sexual fantasies, and fantasies about becoming submissive or becoming dominant, they're so extraordinarily popular. And I think that that's ultimately where a lot of these fantasies come from, is just that this is a creative way of kind of incorporating power exchange into a fantasy.
Okay, but this thing you said at the beginning of your response, also I want to dig into a little bit, which is you said when people think their fantasy is rare, not when their fantasy is rare, but when they think their fantasy is rare, they're more likely to have bad feelings about it, which then would mean that the more people were exposed to sexual fantasies, to sexual variety, you know, the less alone they would feel, and sort of the better they would feel about their fantasies.
And that's the prediction that I would make, and why I think it's important for us to learn about diversity in sexual fantasies, because that's not something we're ever taught in sex education courses. We're taught this very narrow idea of what sex is and what's normal and acceptable. And the reality is that most of us have pretty diverse fantasy worlds. And we're not the only ones who fantasize about the things that we fantasize about. And so by educating others about just that sheer diversity that exists in fantasy content, I think can help to relieve a lot of the shame, embarrassment, and anxiety. And for that reason, a lot of sex therapists have recommended my book to clients, because so many of them are coming in feeling ashamed and embarrassed and guilty about the fantasies that they have, because they think they're the only ones who are turned on by them.
And this is yet another reason that we need comprehensive and accessible and inclusive sex education. right? Yeah, that this needs to be part of the discussion. Otherwise, people are in the fucking dark.
And most people will never get a discussion about sexual fantasies in any kind of sex education. I mean, maybe if they take a college level human sexuality course, they'll learn about this. But, you know, this is something that just most people aren't really exposed to. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do in writing this book, was to create an accessible tool and resource for anyone where they can go and learn about their fantasies, where they come from, what they mean, and how they should think about them, and how to communicate about them more effectively with their partners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take our next break. Coming up, we're going to answer more of your questions, listeners, and hear more about fantasies. So stay with us. We'll be back. Hey, are you planning on voting in person on Election Day? Awesome! Everyone should vote. Please vote. Depending on where you live, you might have to wait in line for a while, and I've got the perfect thing to pass the time. Trivia Star. Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz app that's entertaining and challenging. Pick your category, choose the correct answer from multiple choices, beat the clock, and you're on to the next one. The questions get harder over time, but if you're stuck, don't worry. You can use coins and gems to get a hint and beat the level. Right now, Trivia Star is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. Just go to the Apple or Google Store and search Trivia Star. Again, search for Trivia Star and enjoy 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Download Trivia Star for free today. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Dr. Justin Lehmiller, who has written a great book on sexual fantasies. And I want to hear from you guys, because we've culled together these listener questions from you. You can tweet at us, you can send me an email at tristan@puckerup.com, or you can call us anytime you want. 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. So this question came to us on Twitter. I am very, I guess you'd call it auditory when it comes to sex. I love it when a lover tells me about a fantasy in detail while we're having sex. It gets me really aroused and just heightens the whole experience for me. He's a pretty good storyteller, but lately I've wanted the stories to involve other people doing sexual things to me. How can I steer his stories in that direction? I don't want to have sex with other people in real life, but I do want to hear about it.
It's a great question. And I think I would first say that using fantasies as a form of dirty talk is pretty common and can actually be a really exciting way of adding some novelty into your sex life. So, you know, it's good that you're incorporating them in this way, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people just never talk about their fantasies. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, you know, getting what you want out of this fantasy conversation, I think it's important to express in the way that the viewer or listener just described what they said. So to talk about how, you know, this is something that turns me on. I think it would be really erotic and arousing if we talked about this and maybe you told me some stories in this way. But I just want to be absolutely clear with you that these are not things that I actually want to do. So let's think about this as just sort of an erotic story that we're telling. And that's all that it is. And it's not going to change anything in terms of the way that we negotiate and navigate the rules of our relationship. So I think that's an important piece of kind of any discussion about fantasies, is sort of making it clear whether this is something you actually want to act on versus, you know, this is just something arousing that just turns you on to talk about.
Right. And this, of course, brings up the number one fantasy in your book. So I thought that was really interesting. I mean, there seems like there's a tiny bit of sort of ego protection going on, listener. I just want to say that there's like, you know, we're all grown adults. And so I think we've got to give each other, you know, leeway to share these fantasies and not maybe judge them or not jump to the conclusion, if you want me to tell you about this, you also want it to happen. You know,
absolutely.
I just don't think we should.
Yeah.
Okay. This one I got from on a DM. Oh, you people sliding into my DMs. I've been on the web looking at BDSM porn lately and found myself wishing that I could try it out with my partner. We've never done anything like that before, and I'm not sure how she will react. How do I bring it up and not make her freak out?
And, you know, I get this question a lot because BDSM is such a popular fantasy and people don't know how to go about bringing it up with their partner. And I think when we're talking about fantasies like this, and just fantasies more generally, when it comes to sharing them with a partner, it's start low and go slow and just kind of gradually ease your way into it. So I often recommend people start sharing their fantasies at the more vanilla end of the spectrum and then kind of work their way up to the kinkier ones, because in that process, they're building up trust and intimacy and enhancing their communication skills and sort of testing each other's comfort zones and boundaries and so forth in that regard. So I think it's something where you want to ease into it. And when it comes to something like BDSM, you don't want to jump full into the whips and chains and other things like that right away, because you need to build up that trust and that intimacy if you want to progress to more adventuresome sorts of activities. So maybe it's just you're starting very simply with, you know, incorporating some very mild forms of BDSM into your sex life, like, you know, light spankings or light bondage. You know, there are all kinds of ways that you can enact these fantasies and have some sort of power play or exchange. And you can figure out what you're both comfortable with. And if you decide you want to take it to another level, then you can do that later.
Yeah. I think also specificity would help in this sense. I feel like if you like say to someone, I'm into BDSM, mm-hmm. it doesn't actually give me like a whole lot of information. I would like a little more specificity. Like, I'm into the power dynamics. I'm into the power play. I'm into collars. You know, I saw this thing in porn with hot wax, right? I want you to be more specific. I think it also quells any like people jumping to conclusions. You know what I mean? Because obviously when we hear BDSM, everyone's going to have a different image that we conjure up, right? And that could be alienating. So why not be more specific? That's my advice.
And I think that's great advice too, that when it comes to any fantasy, just being specific, because your partner's visualization or representation of it might be extremely different than yours is.
Yes, yes. Okay, so in your book, you say that your answers to 15 simple questions can help you to predict what types of things are likely to turn you on. I should read that differently. My answers to 15 simple questions can help you, Dr. Justin, predict what types of things are likely to turn me on. So I thought we should go for that.
Yeah. So
has anyone else asked you to do that with them?
A few people have.
Okay.
But this is one of those things where, you know, each one individual factor only tells you so much. And it's really sort of a combination of a lot of different factors that can kind of help you to understand what it is that's likely to turn someone on. And so it depends in part on their personality, their previous sexual experiences and history, their age and where they are in life. You know, all these things come together to influence our fantasies.
Okay, so let's do it. I'm ready to be revealing people.
So I guess one of the questions is, you know, how outgoing are you? How extroverted and sociable are you in real life?
I am what I consider an extrovert with some introvert tendencies. Mm-hmm. But I'm very extroverted. I would say very above average.
Okay. And how would you describe your level of conscientiousness? So basically, how detail oriented are you in real life? How much of a planner are you?
I am 100 on the scale of 1 to 100. Absolutely.
You're a big
no
planner.
Qualms. I'm like so type A and so organized. And if you saw how much my life was organized, you'd think I had obsessive compulsive disorder, but I don't, which I'm not shaming anyone who does. I'm just saying that's not part of my mental health picture.
And how would you say you deal with stress? Do you tend to handle stress pretty well, or do you get stressed out pretty easily?
I have a fair amount of stress in my life. And I think stress for me can lead to either depression or anxiety.
And then how open to experiences are you? So how much do you like and enjoy trying new and different things in general?
Very much.
Okay. So those are some of the questions I looked at, looking at what we call the big five personality traits. And I find that all of those traits are linked to the types of fantasies that people have. So as someone who is very extroverted and outgoing and open to new experiences, and not somebody who is overly easily stressed out, then that would suggest that, you know, the group sex, the multi-partner types of things might be particularly likely to turn you on. And then also that in your fantasies, you're probably going to be pretty detail oriented, right? I find that people who are really high in conscientiousness, they're much more specific in their fantasies about the locations and settings where things take place. And so, yeah, maybe a highly detailed group sex scenario would be particularly appealing to you.
Okay, I like that so much. I like that read so much. And also because I teach a class on sort of reinventing the gangbang, and it is quite detail-oriented. Like, I want people to come up with the details, and I want, you know, and also as someone who's made porn, I feel like I have sort of an eye for the visual as well. Mm-hmm. So I can sometimes see the scenes in my head in great detail, like a sort of film or like a shot from a movie. So that makes sense. Okay, that makes sense. There's more questions too, but you know, we only have so much time.
Yes.
So what do you ultimately think are the benefits of people getting in touch with our fantasies?
So I think there can be benefits to you, the individual, but also to your relationship and your sex life. So by getting more in touch with our fantasies and shedding a lot of the shame and anxiety that we have, I think we can ultimately feel a lot better about ourselves and about what turns us on. Because so many of us, instead of embracing our fantasies, we run from them. We try to suppress those thoughts because they make us uncomfortable. And it turns out that thought suppression is a terrible way to deal with an uncomfortable thought, and that it creates this, what we call obsessive preoccupation, where when you try to banish an unwanted thought, you try not to think about it, that just makes you think about it even more. Mm-hmm. And then that creates psychological distress. So I think getting more in touch with our fantasies can help to relieve a lot of that kind of distress. But by the same token, I find that the people who are sharing and acting on their fantasies report the happiest and healthiest sex lives. They have the strongest relationships, and they also report the fewest problems with sexual functioning, right? So I think there are all kinds of benefits we can get from this.
Yeah, and I think again and again, we see these moments of sexual repression where folks feel so much guilt or shame. What this makes me think of immediately is, like, I don't know, years ago, a politician died in a closet from self-asphyxiation wearing like a rubber suit. And I just kept thinking to myself, if this person could find other people to do this with, if this person hadn't like thought, I have to do this alone because no one's going to like this or be turned on by this, if they weren't feeling so isolated and then actually physically isolated when they were acting it out, like, this could have had a totally different story.
Sure. And I think that that's, you know, one example of how keeping our fantasies to ourselves can be somewhat dangerous, especially if it leads us to try and act them out alone in ways where, you know, maybe this is a fantasy that would be much safer with a partner who could ensure that, you know, your health and safety was really being taken care of there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I just feel like we've seen again and again how repression leads to sexual dysfunction and to people doing things that are unsafe or just unhealthy for them.
Yeah. And, you know, so many of us also just have problems when it comes to distraction and being in the moment when it comes to sex. And a big part of that is because we're not getting what we want out of sex. And by tapping into those fantasies, sharing them with our partners, potentially acting on some of them, we can help create these novel, really immersive experiences that draw us in and allow us to really experience pleasure in a new way without us kind of getting lost and distracted in our head.
Right. Or checking out, right?
Yeah.
For people who check out. It does, I feel like it does engage you more. I mean, this is me being detail-oriented again, but it's like when there's a scenario and a sort of script and you have to keep on it, it's hard for you to then like blank out or think about other things. And it keeps you very present in the moment.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show and having this discussion with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tristan. It's been a lot of fun.
The book is called Tell Me What You Want: The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. It was just published in paperback by Hachette Books. Get it wherever you get your reading material. I especially encourage you to support independent bookstores, which you can do by ordering through bookshop.org. Justin's site is sexandpsychology.com, where he blogs. On Twitter, he is Justin Lehmiller, L-E-H-M-I-L-L-E-R. On Instagram, he's Justin J. Lehmiller. And on Facebook, he is Psychology of Sex. Thanks so much. I love my team, even though my team has grown much smaller these days. It's me, it's Zoom, and it's Aaron A-Rod Rodriguez on the board and doing the editing. So thanks to him. Thanks to you for listening. New episodes go up on podcast platforms every Monday. I am on social media at Tristan Taramino across all platforms. And before I see you or you hear me again, take some time to talk about sex and fantasies out loud.